KALW.
There was a utopia of seeing folks who looked like me, who talked like me.
Today, we hear the story of transgender immigrant and organizer Anjali Rimi, who says moving to San Francisco was life-changing.
It felt that I was dead and I reached to heaven.
Then a drag performer tells us how trans queens have been othered in the art of drag.
Just another thing where people are trying to tell women, specifically trans women, that no, you can't be part of this.
And from San Francisco StoryCorps, we hear about telling someone who you are and seeing where it goes.
You were like, just so you know, I'm transgender. And I said, okay, are you going to buy me a drink?
That's exactly what you said.
We're celebrating Transgender History Month. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. August is Transgender History Month in San Francisco. Today, we'll be sharing stories on the experience of being transgender in the Bay Area. Many queer and trans people come to San Francisco to flee discrimination and sometimes even violence in their hometowns. Anjali Rimi was one of those people. They grew up in India and were assigned male at birth, but throughout their childhood and youth, they knew they weren't living their truth. I spoke with Anjali in 2022. Here's an excerpt of our conversation.
I was born into a lower middle class family in India. And at a very young age, I realized that I was not in the right body, but in the right mind. I looked at other girls and thought I would blossom like them one fine day when I came to the right age. But that didn't happen. I expressed myself very openly to my parents, and my mom took an understanding to me, but I had great resistance, abuse, and punishment, as I might say, from the rest of the family and society at large. And so my journey was very transparent and in a way liberating because I didn't hold it back.
Right. And sometimes, you know, it's society, but the family is actually okay.
I would say my family, primarily my mom, understood and stood by me, whereas the rest of the family understood but could not stand by me. But to your point, it was the society that conditioned them to believe that gender was a certain way. But it was the same society that also told them what was wrong with me every single day.
Right. And I'm sorry to have you tell this story, but I just think it's important for people to hear and to understand. And I'm grateful for you sharing the story. And so then what happens? What leads you to this idea of, I need to leave and I need to leave to the U.S.?
I never thought of leaving India because I really love my culture and my country from where I was. But it came to a point where I just realized that I was suffocated just living. So basically, I completed my education and I was looking for opportunities to just be away from a community or a society that knew me and start a new world and a new life elsewhere. And so America was one of the many destinations that felt like it's the land I could be in.
How did you end up in the city?
Well, I came here and I was going to grad school in Idaho. And obviously, 9/11.
Idaho.
9/11 had just happened. Yes, Idaho. And I was like, I am in the land of the free and I can wear whatever I want and show up however I want. Well, I realized very quickly that there's something called racism. There was something called xenophobia. And anti-Asian hate, which all these words I know now, but that night, trigger warning, when I was beat up by three white guys and the police wouldn't even take a report because it was not in their jurisdiction, I realized that I am still an alien immigrant to this country. And so I again needed to find a safer space to be in. So I was, you know, back then we had Yahoo grew, with the money I had, my stipend was $600. I got on a Greyhound and I showed up in 2002 in San Francisco. When I came here, I think there was a utopia of seeing folks who looked like me, who talked like me, who dressed like me. It felt that I honestly was dead and I reached the heaven. It felt like I was born all over again. I still vividly remember that day in June of 2002 when I was here for a Pride parade and marching and walking with this group of South Asian queer folks. I just felt like I could live. There was a sense of achievement and some sort of big breakthrough that happened in my life. And I really, really wish it stayed that way. What I realized very quickly is back then, even San Francisco was not necessarily where it should be or is today for transgender folks. So while I wanted to fast forward this 24-year-old struggle of being my whole self and tried to access hormones, tried to access counseling, they were not necessarily available for somebody who was an immigrant, whose English wasn't the greatest, and who did not have necessarily great insurance. And then I said, I am going to make sure that no another Anjali Remy is going to go through the hell I had to go through in a place, in a land, in a city that is so beautiful. And told myself, this is where I sojourn. This is where I put my roots down. This is where I'm going to do my work, because this is where it will have the most impact. And this is where my journey began. And I want to see so many more coming off the SFO airport that can say, I am home.
And you've been doing that through Parivar. So tell us about Parivar's work.
We want Parivar to be the world's leading organization for South Asian transgender advocacy. What we have been doing is creating powerful spaces that center transgender folks within the South Asian diaspora and building coalitions with many transgender communities across the Latinx, Black, and Asian diasporas. Parivar is truly a collective, as in all our efforts are grassroots.
Anjali, what, you know, just going back in time and with all you've done since then, what do you make of yourself? I mean, what does all of this mean to you to see where you are now and what you've done, not just for yourself, but for a whole community of people?
It's a tough question to answer, Hannah, because I'm still working through a lot of my own mental challenges, the traumas, and the fact that, you know, this work is very revolutionary, so it does not sit well with some folks within the diaspora and beyond. So we have had a lot of criticism come our way in the past 2 years, especially around our pandemic relief work here and globally. So I tell myself, and I'm told every day by the leaders who surround me in this movement, that what we are doing is simply never done before. And so I sit here with a lot of gratitude. I sit here with a lot of comfort, knowing that we have been able to do something, even if it's the most rudimentary thing, to create space and make someone feel belonged.
Anjali Remy is co-founder of Parivar, a San Francisco-based organization for South Asian queer and trans people. There was more to our conversation. You can hear the full version and find a link to their calendar at klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. As we heard, the transgender community has a history of fighting for acceptance, and that includes some spaces that may surprise you. With campy outfits, over-the-top makeup, and sky-high wigs, drag sells a fantasy of how to become a larger-than-life character and a big dose of escapism. But fantasy met reality in 2018 when world-famous drag queen RuPaul made remarks that were trans-exclusionary, remarks about who he would allow on his show, RuPaul's Drag Race. RuPaul has since apologized for his comments and said, quote, "The trans community are the heroes of our shared LGBTQ movement." But it did spark a conversation about performing drag as a transgender individual. Bay Area performer and trans woman Pearl Tees met with KALW's Porfirio Rangel to break it all down in this story from 2019.
I get off at Castro Station and make my way up the escalators to Harvey Milk Plaza. It's kind of windy, so the neighborhood's massive rainbow flag is flying freely. I walk down Castro Street, past SoulCycle and the iconic movie house, and make my way to Strut, Castro's health and wellness center for the queer community. As I walk up the stairs, I hear some music being played. People are talking among themselves, grabbing food and drinks. I'm swaying with the music and making sure I don't drop my drink.
I'm going to introduce y'all to our hostess for the night. Her name is Pearl Tees. She's an amazing performer, and I'm sure she's going to show some skin. So welcome to Pearl Tees. Woo!
I've been to a lot of drag shows, and let me just say, I love the energy of the crowd and the big personas of the performers. They're living in and for the moment. And from the looks of her outfit, tonight's theme is sexy realness. Our host Pearl Tees is wearing a pink snakeskin top with black patent leather booty shorts. She's killing it with her matching black thigh-high boot.
Y'all wanna see a show, right? Y'all don't wanna see a show?
Pearl's whipping her ponytail back and forth, and like Miss Beyonce would say, she's feeling herself. Now, Pearl may look like a typical drag queen, but she doesn't see it that way.
I don't consider myself a drag queen per se, because I'm not a cis male, but I do perform in drag. I've been a drag entertainer or entertaining for 8 years. I've only started my medical transition 3.5 years ago. So I've been entertaining long before I transitioned.
Born and raised in San Francisco, Pearl first got into drag in her 20s when she and her friend experimented just for fun.
I initially wasn't like thinking about doing it. It wasn't anything I really, really wanted to do. But my friend was like, come on, let's dress up. So we dressed up and I kind of got addicted just because I liked what I saw in the mirror. And then eventually we would go out and stuff and we would see shows. And in high school, I was always into theater. I was a dancer. And to be able to dress up, dance, and use theater all in one gave me the chance to use that on stage and get paid for it.
And how did the name Pearl Tees come about? Well, it's definitely a nod to her culture.
When I started entertaining, I had this really long, drawn-out name, and I came across a mentor, I guess you could say, or like kind of like a coach. And we came up with Pearl Tees because I'm both Black and Filipino. And I don't know if you know what a Pearl Tea is. Do you know what those drinks are that have boba in it, like Quickleys?
Mm-hmm.
That's a Pearl Tea. So we figured the tapioca, the pearl, would represent kind of like my Filipino side. And the tea, the black tea, would represent my black side. And then we added a little bit of sex in there and it became Pearl Tees.
While many are familiar with cis males performing as female drag queens, it should not be mistaken that being a trans female and drag performer are the same. Drag is an art, and for some, a full-time job. But trans is a gender identity. For Pearl, it helped her find a way to describe her transition.
I feel like I've known forever, you know, that I was a trans person, I just didn't have the right words for it. It didn't help me find my identity, but it did help me come to terms with it. And then I think once I reached adulthood and kind of found out what a trans person was and being an entertainer just helped me come to terms with it.
Why is it a big deal that Pearl is a trans woman performing drag? Well, legendary drag queen RuPaul caused a big stir in the drag community when he talked about queens who've transitioned.
I want to read more of the quote because there's more.
Oh.
Asked if he would accept a contestant who had medically transitioned, RuPaul hesitates and said, probably not. You can identify as a woman and say you're transitioning, but it changes once you start changing your body. It takes on a different thing. It changes the whole concept of what we're doing. We've had some girls who've had some injections in the face and maybe a little bit in the butt here and there, but they haven't transitioned.
As drag becomes mainstream, largely due to RuPaul and his show, it may have inadvertently created an expectation of what is and isn't drag, as well as who can and can't do it. Well, Pearl's not letting RuPaul off the hook.
Trans women were accepted in drag before RuPaul's Drag Race. I think RuPaul's Drag Race kind of has tried to redefine drag to its own standard. So I think drag is and has been and always will evolve. Just like fashion, all of these things are parts of drag. And as they evolve, drag, I think, evolves also. But there are different forms of drags. There's drag kings, drag queens, trans queens, bio queens, faux queens. There's all kinds of queens.
For Pearl, the othering of trans queens is part of a much larger issue.
Just another thing where people are trying to tell women, specifically trans women, that no, you can't be part of this. We don't think you have what we believe is required. And I just couldn't disagree more with that.
And some people will love it, others not so much. But Pearl's okay with that.
I think drag fans are. I'm not sure about drag race fans, because I think they are two very different things. There are people who are fans of drag and are out in their own communities and cities or wherever they are, going to drag shows, seeing their local queens, versus people who are not necessarily fans of drag. They're just fans of the characters of RuPaul's Drag Race.
I'm with Pearl on this one. And after talking with her and getting a better sense of how fluid drag really is, I really appreciate the show. In San Francisco, I'm Porfirio Rangel for Cross Currents.
That story first aired in 2019, and since we aired that story, Pearl Tease has become the host for Trans Voices at Strut in San Francisco. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henna Baba. Just like other parents, Bethany Snyder and Christian Mall experienced the joys and challenges of raising a kid. But their family is a little different from most. Bethany and Christian sat down at the StoryCorps booth in San Francisco back in 2018 to talk about how they became a family and why it's important to tell their story.
Hi, my name is Bethany Snyder, and I am talking with my partner, Chris.
And my name is Christian Mall.
I was at a gay bar with some friends, and I saw Chris walk in with some friends, and I thought, that's someone I want to get to know. But I remember, like, right away, you were like, just so you know, I'm transgender. And I said, okay, are you going to buy me a drink?
That's exactly what you said. When I first kind of was starting to figure out my gender identity, I wasn't quite sure how I would maybe become a parent or if I would have a partner who would want to parent a child with me.
I knew, like, when I met you and we started talking, that I wanted to have a family with you.
We decided to wait until we had gotten married to start down that process. And Bethany basically let me, like, pick out the sperm donor. So
when it let you, I said, I'm going to do the rest of the work.
Right.
When she came out, I remember the first thing I thought was, oh my gosh, she has my eyebrows.
She does.
All I saw was eyebrows.
At birth, yeah, you could tell. So I'm a trans guy. I am not biologically related to Evelyn. And I think for some people, they're like, well, you know, does it feel like something's missing? And no, like nothing's missing. That matters 0% to me. But I can't imagine feeling any more connected to a human than I do to her.
In some ways, I feel like being a parent erases our LGBT identity out in the world. But in other ways, it's even more important now than ever for our daughter to understand, like, who we are as a family and who both of us are.
And she already knows, like, okay, there's this sperm donor person that helped biologically make her. Like, that's just part of her story. One of the things that I'm worried about is, as she gets older, is she going to start to feel that shame? Because I don't want her to. And it's like, I can't protect her from that, you know?
And I just hope she stays feisty.
That's one of the many qualities she's gotten from you, I think. Like last week when she decided to tell basically the whole Daisy Girl Scout troop that I'm transgender in the middle of the pumpkin patch field trip.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, I know. It is scary. I mean, in those moments, sometimes I freeze, like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do right now? Yeah, I mean, I think that's great that she's pushing me and us kind of outside of our comfort zone, because we know the way that we make policy change is to tell our stories.
The kindergarten teacher rethought about how she thought about gender, and the principal and the school psychologist, I'm thinking, like, this little six-year-old is impacting these four adults. And she doesn't even, like, just by being her, like, she doesn't even know it.
If now there are, you know, a dozen stay-at-home moms from Roseville, California, that know that they know someone who's transgender, like, if that someday is going to impact the way that they vote on a ballot initiative, you know, who they vote for, it's worth me being uncomfortable at a pumpkin patch.
There aren't a lot of examples of trans dads in the world. Chris is the most amazing father.
Oh, thanks, honey.
That was Bethany Snyder and Christian Maul, recorded in the StoryCorps booth at the San Francisco Public Library in 2018. Their story was packaged for radio by Celine Ross. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. Breakdancing is making its Olympic debut this weekend, and there are some mixed feelings about it.
People saying, oh, like, this is stupid. Why is this being an Olympic sport? Blah, blah, blah. Like, should staring contests be next in the Olympics?
We break it down tomorrow morning at 11. Before we go, here's some music from a local choir.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round, and you can't find the fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out.
This is San Francisco's New Voices Bay Area TIGQ Chorus. It's a mixed voice choral ensemble for singers who self-identify as transgender, intersex, or genderqueer. Today's Cross Currents team includes Hussein Khan, Aru Nair, Julia Haney, Nigar Ajayabi, James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.